recycling has been around as a concept for quite a while. It seems easy enough to do our part as a consumer, separating what's recyclable from our other waste. But are we doing it right? Are we recycling the right stuff, or are we wish-cycling? And are there changes we need to make before we're figuring out how to throw something away? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you ever feel confused about what you can and can't recycle? Do you go to greater lengths to recycle, sorting things extra, making an extra trip somewhere to get that stuff that you can't put out on the curb? Do you try to avoid buying things that are unrecyclable in the first place? And you have questions about how it all works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jenny Romer is a single-use plastic and recycling expert who helped write plastic bag bans in California and New York. She's a legal associate for the Surfrider Foundation's Plastic Pollution Initiative and has spent more than a decade as a lawyer working on plastic pollution laws. Her new book is called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. Jenny, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, in your book, Jenny, you get into a lot of the nuts and bolts and specific things, but one big picture emerges and is consistent through your book. It seems like we can recycle a lot less plastic than I think we can. Why is that?
Right. Well, recycling is a commodities market. And so there's some plastic that's worth a whole lot. And there are buyers and there's an end market for it. So HDPE bottles and jugs, which is resin number two, that's worth almost $1,000 a ton on the commodities market. But three through sevens, that's the majority of what we see on the store shelves, that's only worth about -$17 a ton. So really, if there's no end market, no one that wants to buy all this stuff that we put in our bins, there's not so much of a point of trying to recycle it. So that's a lot of what I try to get across in the book, is that plastic isn't just one thing. So we need to think about that a little bit differently.
Before we get to the stage where we agonize about can I recycle this or not, Jenny, are there changes you'd like to see in the manufacturing process so that, the stuff that isn't ultimately going to be recycled doesn't end up on that shelf in the first place?
Definitely. And that's a big take home from the book. You know, I really want people to know what happens after they put items in their bin. But a big take home is policy. And so at the state level, we're seeing a lot of extended producer responsibility laws. People call them EPR laws, where it would make the manufacturers responsible for the cost of recycling and disposal and cleanup of products. And that makes it so that there's a lot of incentives to create more sustainable, more truly recyclable items that end up on store shelves. And then kind of a bigger picture take home is at the federal level, the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act that includes that type of policy, but then really looks at the whole life cycle of plastics and other materials.
And you have a lot of focus, it even makes it into your subtitle, on single-use plastics. What kind of things are you looking at and why are they of particular concern to you?
Well, my background, as you mentioned, is in plastic bag laws. It's something I kind of stumbled across when I was in law school in San Francisco, and plastic bags were initially being banned there. And I started a website about it right after law school because the plastics industry was just super organized about lobbying to not have those laws pass. And I saw in kind of internal PowerPoints where they saw it as a gateway to broader restrictions on plastics. And so I really got involved there and helped pass a lot of policies and really figured out what works and what doesn't as far as banning plastic bags or putting a fee on plastic bags. And then really learned a lot more about how the recycling system works. And plastic bags in particular are tanglers in curbside recycling programs. So they end up tangling a lot of that sorting machinery. So not only do they not really have an end market, no one really wants to buy those bags that end up in the curbside bins, but they also cause a lot of havoc at recycling facilities. So that's one thing that we look to really reduce rather than recycle.
Talking to Jenny Romer about her new book, Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. You can join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. 1234. All right, Jenny, let's take us to a kind of question that I know you get asked a lot, the can I recycle this? And often, and I'll speak for myself, I've been in that position, I'm not sure, it's in that gray area. I'm best off erring on the side of caution. I'll put it in the recycling bin, and if it's no problem, if they can't recycle, they'll just take it out. I'm making the wrong decision, it sounds like. Tell me why.
Well, it depends. I really want people to get to know their local recycling rules. So your local jurisdiction has made decisions about what they want to accept in the bin. For example, in New York City accepts all rigid plastics in their residential curbside bins, but they know that they can only really sell a certain portion of them. And so they'll accept everything to make it easy for the consumer. And they know that they are not going to have a buyer for quite everything. But then some jurisdictions will only accept number one and number two bottles and jugs because they know there's a market for that. So first thing, pay attention to what your facility wants you to recycle. But then all this book really helps you get to know what happens next. So to make better choices when you're at the market, when you're making purchases, to not buy things or try to avoid as much as you can buying things that are not recyclable, and really avoiding those things that are tanglers that really hurt the recycling system.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Oconomowoc. Mike, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The one thing I noticed after moving back here from North Carolina was how limited Wisconsin has recycling programs and how difficult it is to recycle so many things that when I was in North Carolina was very easy to recycle, particularly electronics. There's just doesn't seem to be any place to take anything, whereas down there was a very well-networked recycling system throughout the whole Charlotte and Raleigh areas that made it very easy for people to bring recyclables, divide them up themselves, and take them to the appropriate places rather than just putting them in a blue bin and hoping that they make it through the recycling system.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. And I know that varies not just from state to state, but from city to city here in Wisconsin. Jenny, can you talk about why communities might be making different decisions and offering different options?
Sure. Well, a lot of it depends on policy. So some states have zero waste goals at the state level that put requirements then on the local level for what recycling goals they need to meet. So that has a lot to do with it. A lot of it depends on the political will or what's happening at the local level and where you live. But another thing is that recycling can be expensive. It depends on what you're trying to recycle. But if your local recycler isn't making money in the process, for a long time, municipal recyclers were making money by selling low value plastics or electronics that were being shipped abroad. But now we're seeing more regulation and really a lot more eyes on that issue as far as really that it's a humanitarian issue when we're sending our electronics or our low value plastics abroad. So some places are doing it or are not accepting them because they're not going to be recycled domestically. So that's one thing to look at. But I would say that generally, it's something that is going to be decided probably at the state level, how much you're seeing kind of trickle down to the local level in most places.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Paul now in Delafield. Paul, hi.
Howdy. Thanks for taking my call. So one of the things we do, we do like to recycle, but one of the things that I see happening is that when they pick up the recycle things in their trucks, if it's not secured, like a lot of it blows around, and after recycle day you see a bunch of plastic out in the lawns and stuff. So I end up putting my recycle stuff in plastic bags that I tie so they don't blow around. But is that a good habit, or should I get over that?
Paul, thanks for the call. Jenny?
I think you should try to get over it. It's, you know, something that maybe you can bring up with your local hauler, because it should have a way to capture those plastics before they get out into the environment from being hauled. But generally, like I said, plastic bags are tanglers at facilities. There are some facilities that who know they're going to get a lot of plastic bags regardless, or who require that you put your recyclables into plastic bags, particularly in really dense cities where there isn't room for what we call toters or garbage cans, recycling cans. And so in those places, there'll usually be kind of a vacuum suction at the beginning of a sorting line, so that those plastics are kind of sucked off and held and taken out of the recycling stream. But most places, those plastic bags are kind of just going to get stuck in the machinery. So do your best to avoid it. And I would say if you want to make a difference, try to reach out to your hauler about that problem.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Jenny Romer about her new book. It's called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What burning recycling questions do you have about what can and can't be recycled and about how the recycling business works in general? And do you make an effort to buy things that you know can be reused or recycled, as opposed to stuff you know you're going to end up throwing out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Right now, we're picking up our talk with single-use plastic and recycling expert Jenny Romer about her new book, Can I Recycle This? You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Jenny, before we go back to our caller, you introduced me to a new word in this book. You dig into the sort of the life cycle of recycling, including of plastic, the nurdle, N-U-R-D-L-E. What is a nurdle?
A nurdle is a pre-production plastic pellet. So it's what kind of the base for what plastic items are made from. And so that's the nurdles have been in the news a bit lately because plastic production facilities have had very large nurdle spills. So even before plastic becomes an item and is used, they're getting into the environment just at the production level. And so there have been some laws proposed in Texas and other places to regulate them. So if you're at the beach sometime and you see, or even in the Great Lakes, if you see little tiny bits of plastic, it could be a nurdle.
Let's go back to our callers now. Colleen is with us in Madison. Colleen, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what'd you want to bring up, Colleen?
Well, I'm going to focus on two things. One is that I just came from California, where I was living for many years. I'm from Madison. And I would say I cannot take any credit, but the plastic bags in grocery stores was made illegal. And also styrofoam on takeout food was also prohibited in my town. But it seems like, and now that I have a word, it seems like the nurdle production is fixed, so that almost exactly at the same time, food that is in the grocery stores started to become present in pouches. So even like rice products that come in burlap or cloth sacks suddenly, or even paper, suddenly they were put into these pouches, and the pouches were, they had a photograph of a burlap bag or a cloth bag, like the Japanese rice, that would be printed on the plastic pouch. These can't be recycled. Also, there's a trend, and especially in the town that I lived in, to have rows and rows of organic, blended, pure vegetables in pouches. And then when you go to the parks, you see the caps for these pouches and the pouches themselves thrown all about and in the garbage cans.
Colleen, thanks a lot for the call. Jenny, Colleen says, hey, they got rid of the single-use plastic bags, but saw more and more products ending up wrapped in plastic.
Yeah, that's really a worldwide phenomena, the multi-layer pouches, particularly single-use multi-layer pouches. So just moving from buying in bulk or buying, you know, buying a 10-pound bag of something to buying smaller sizes and having it be in what we call multi-layer pouches. So there tend to be a couple of different types of plastic and maybe some aluminum. And one general rule for recycling is if something is made from multiple materials, it's not going to be recyclable. So if it has, if it's made from all these things, there's kind of one exception is milk cartons. Milk cartons tend to be some are made from kind of Tetra Paks, which are generally not recyclable except for the paper layer. And then the paper layer of regular milk cartons have a paper layer and then both plastic, plastic on both sides. And so only the paper fibers from those are recyclable. But for the most part, multi-layer pouches are a huge problem. You see them for baby food, and they're definitely not recyclable. And I agree with the caller. We're starting to address certain things. And we've gotten a really good handle on things like plastic bags and foam foodware, where those laws are allowed. But we're seeing a lot more single-use items on the grocery store shelves. And I will say, in Wisconsin, there is a preemption law in place at the state level. So local jurisdictions are not allowed to adopt plastic bag laws. So that's a whole other subject, but just to raise that. And that's something we've seen in about 18 states now, where the plastics industry, rather than dealing with these local laws popping up to put a fee or ban plastic bags or ban foam foodware, just going to the state level and blocking that. And I'll also say I just completed a map of all plastic bag, foam, and straw laws in the U.S. At Surfrider. So if you go to Surfrider's website, there's a beautiful map of almost 1,000 laws that have been adopted in the U.S. to reduce single-use plastics.
Thanks for the call, Colleen. We'll go next to Pat in River West. Pat, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just recently watched, I came into this program late, but I recently watched a NPR show about the kind of the sham of the recycling emblem that, you know, that makes us all feel good about the triangle with the 1, 2, 3, 4. And you feel better when you see they recycle all the numbers. But they said that was designed by the plastic petroleum companies in the 70s. And in their internal documents, it said that this won't be not implied, it won't be utilized because it just doesn't cost, it's not cost effective. It takes more energy and chemicals to recycle plastic. So really plastic is, it's getting cheaper and cheaper with these factories that make these plastic pellets and stuff, but it's a sham to utilize petroleum waste. And really we should be going for glass or paper. I mean, I won't buy anything. If it's the best chocolate creamer in a plastic bottle, I don't buy plastic anymore. I'll buy a half as good, product in glass. You know, Annie's Annie's salad dressing, Oberweis chocolate milk. I will not buy. I'll starve before I buy something in plastic, or I'll buy even another water bottle.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jenny. Pat seeking to use anything but plastic in his products.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I really want to take home from the book for people to understand what's happening to these items and to make choices when they're at the supermarket and in other parts of their lives. And this book definitely gets into the history of the recycling, the chasing arrows symbol, and how the plastics industry has really spent so much money and so much effort, you know, as that Frontline documentary talks about, really going into the plastics industry has spent millions of dollars over decades on marketing to make us feel really good about recycling when they knew the whole time that a lot of these things cannot actually be recycled. It's not an efficient system for the low value plastics. So my book really looks at kind of a three-step process that the Federal Trade Commission's guideline for whether something can be marketed as recyclable. And so that means it must be collected, that item must be collected in at least 60% of consumers would have access to collection. It would be sorted by existing infrastructure, and there would be an end market, a buyer, to make that into a new product. And so that's a pretty strict definition of recycling, but it is a very valid, accurate, I think everyone should think of recycling as will someone buy this and manufacture it into a new product? And that documentary really looks at that as well.
Jenny, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Jenny Romer, legal associate for the Surfrider Foundation's Plastic Pollution Initiative. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. Still time for you to share your recycling stories, the efforts you make to make sure things don't go to waste. You can do that online over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can always tweet us at Central Time WPR.